The House will come to order. The flag salute will be led by Representative Krieger.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Opening ceremonies will be presented by Gary Miranda of Portland. He's going to be reading a poem, and he is a guest of Representative Cannon.
Thank you. I want to thank Representative Tomei for inviting me and for the introduction. And I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the presence of my old boss and fishing partner, Mitch Greenlick, and my former Little League catcher, Jules Bailey. I'll refrain from commenting on their respective performance in those roles, which I'm sure Jules, at least, will appreciate. Percy Bysshe Shelley once called poets the unacknowledged legislators of the world, and he was right, at least about the unacknowledged part. So it's nice to be acknowledged by some real legislators, even if it is April Fool's Day. I was originally told that I had 3 to 5 minutes. This was revised to 2 minutes, but at the risk of having my poetic license revoked, I'm going to go with 3 to 5 and read you 3 poems. This first one I chose just because I find that captive audiences, which you are, tend to identify with the little black boy in the poem. It's called The One That Got Away. Man, you got a bird where your brain should be, he says, talking to me. I say, perhaps you'd like to explain that figure of speech for the whole class. He says, a bird, man, a bird. That's one of them things with wings, what flies around. You just sits on your ass, but your brain, it flies around. Goes flap and flap, like this. He shows me then with his arms doing flapping flaps between the aisles, like a trained crow's bad imitation of a little black boy flying. Then he flaps to the back of the room and out the door, free. Free of the class that doesn't crack a smile. Free of the teacher who sits on his ass, a bird, where his brain should be. Several years back, during National Poetry Month on Prairie Home Companion, Garrison Keillor asked people in the audience to get up and recite a poem that they knew by heart. And one woman got up and recited this next poem of mine. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really what it's all about. Somebody cares enough about one of your poems, not only to memorize it, but to stand up and say it out loud on national public radio. That's about as good as it gets. So I would like to read this poem sort of in honor of that young woman who I was never able to thank. It's called Like Snow. Some people would remember iron railings, the color of buildings, how a dog circled 3 times before settling in. Novelists, certainly, are just good talkers. Most of us take only the light from a place and translate even that into the way our spirits shape the light. We flash into knowledge, which, if we ignore it, will not forgive us. Objects can survive fine on their own, but the feel for how that face, that window, falls upon the momentary way we hold ourselves could easily get lost, and who would find it? Such loss, if lived with, stiffens into pain. It stands up, starched and handsome, ready to please the neighbors. We find ourselves forgetting dreams, whole days, the last time we were honest. We ask ourselves, say something in childhood, and feel only the weight of what that means, brush against our face like snow. Like snow, we say, not even coming close. And finally, I'd like to read a poem. It's not one of mine. It's a poem by William Stafford, the former poet laureate of Oregon and a friend of mine. And I chose this poem simply because there's a line in it that I think is appropriate to the occasion. It's called Aunt Mabel. This town is haunted by some good deed that reappears like a country cousin, or truth when language falters these days trying to lie. Because Aunt Mabel, an old lady gone now, would accost even strangers to give bright flowers away, quick as a striking snake. Its deeds like this have weakened me, shaken by intermittent trust, stricken with friendliness. Our senator talked like war, and Aunt Mabel said, "He's a brilliant man, but we didn't elect him that much." There are Aunt Mabels all over the world, or their graves in the rain. I see some of you recognize the line in question. It seems to me that that any elected official, including the temporary mayor of my own fair city, would do well to memorize that line. He's a brilliant man, but we didn't elect him that much. But I was cautioned against lobbying, so that's about as close to lobbying as I'm going to get, even if it is April Fool's Day. I want to thank you again for inviting me, and thank you as well for all the good work you do on behalf of myself and all the citizens of the great state of Oregon. Thank you very much.
Courtesies. Representative Greenlick.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank Representative Cannon for allowing me to take the courtesy, thanking Gary Miranda for being with us today. And I won't tell you how he evaluated the catching capability of the representative from the Inner East Side of Oregon with something like, well, I won't tell you. You have to ask the representative. I do want to tell you, Gary Miranda came to work for me at the Kaiser Permanente Center for Health Research more than 20 years ago, and he was a professor of poetry at Reed, and I asked him why he would want to come to the research center to be a technical editor, and he reported that he was dedicating his life to the prevention of word abuse, and that the research center was a place rife for that problem. And I'll just mention one story. Gary went to read some of his poetry to his son's third grade class. And after reading some poetry, one of the students in the class raised their hand and asked him, "Was that a real poem you read, or did you just make it up in your head?" And I think today you could choose for yourself, and I welcome you to the Capitol, Gary, and thank you very much for being here.
Representative Van Orman for our moment in history.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Disappeared. Okay. A few years back, I was asked, I was hired to read grants, and I'm back in Washington, D.C., and I'm having breakfast, and I have this big name tag that says Suzanne Van Orman. And this woman walks up to me, and she said, "I had relatives killed on the Oregon Trail with Van Ormans, and here is the story." This history moment is from the Oregon Historical Society's online educational resources, the Oregon History Project, and the Oregon Time Web. On November 24, 1860, the Oregon Argus published an account of one of the worst massacres of overland immigrants by Indians in the history of American West, the Utter Van Ornum Massacre. The article was written from the point of view of one of the survivors, Joseph Myers. His grim tale emphasized the dangers of overland migration, not only from Indian attacks, but from the unforgiving landscape. Sustained attacks by Indians on immigrants were rare, and mutual aid between Indians and overlanders was much more common than violent hostility. As the number of immigrants crossing the Oregon Trail increased over the course of the 1850s, however, the Indian and white relations deteriorated. The Utter Van Orman Party left Wisconsin in May 1860, most heading for Oregon's Willamette Valley. The wagon train, which consisted of 18 men, 5 women, 21 children, 12 wagons, and 100 head of livestock, arrived at abandoned Fort Hall on August 21, 1860. And a company of U.S. Army Dragoons escorted them for only 6 days, purportedly because the commanding officer was upset with members of the train. About 10 days after departing from the Dragoon escort, the Utter Van Orman Trail was attacked by approximately 100 Indians, probably a mixed group of Shoshone and Bannock. Accounts by survivors indicate that several white men were among them. The emigrants circled the wagon and held off their attackers for 2 days until lack of water and extreme heat forced them to run for the river. They immediately were overwhelmed. 11 emigrants were killed during the first 2 days, after which the survivors abandoned their wagons and fled, splitting into several groups. The Van Ornums and 3 other emigrants were later killed in mid-October near present-day Huntington. Another group stayed along the Owyhee River, where they slowly starved. 5 of the immigrants, 4 of them children, died while waiting for rescue, and the survivors were forced to eat the remains. They were finally rescued by the U.S. Army 45 days later, and in such terrible shape that soldiers threw themselves down and wept at the sight. Of the original 4 members of the Utter Van Ornum Party, only 16 survived, including 1 of the Van Ornum children who was rescued from the Shoshone 2 years later.
For their courtesies, I would once again like to extend a happy birthday to Representative Cameron and to Representative Barker. They are both aging quickly in this session. Further courtesies, Representative Tomei and
a
guest.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like to welcome a guest from the Senate, Senator Margaret Carter, who has come here to join us for a little while this morning. Senator Carter.
I've been invited to sing Marilyn Monroe's style of happy birthday to our guest today. And I'm going to ask Representative Cannon if he would join us at this desk as well. Kevin Cameron. Happy birthday, Mr. Barker. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. Cameron. Happy birthday to both of you.
Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Colleague. It is a good day today, isn't it? Well, it's especially exciting for me because I have 3 wonderful pages that I will meet here in just a little bit. I came in a little late, and then a very special intern. So would Megan, please forgive me, Usselman? Thank you. Please stand. Megan is a junior at Regis High School, and she enjoys cross country and track and is interested in education, and she's narrowed it down to the fourth through eighth grades. And then we have Michael Usselman, and Michael is a freshman also at Regis High School. He's into baseball, cross country, and basketball. And he's interested in education K through 4, so I think the family's going to round out K-8. And then we have Emily Schwint, also of Regis. She's a junior, enjoys volleyball and track, so I welcome the three of them today and all our other honorary pages. I have one other courtesy. I'd like to introduce Zach Webb. He will be interning in our office, and we'll be sharing him with Representative Olson for the next couple, 3 months. Zach is going to finish up his sophomore year at the U of O in June, and he actually just started there this year. He graduated last year from high school, so this is a guy with big plans and a great future. And he's also a good friend of the family, so please welcome him.
Further courtesies, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Have a couple of honorary pages I'd like to introduce. First, Rosa, would you stand up? Rosa Zavala. And Rosa is an eighth grader from Leslie Middle School. She loves the Power Program, which is an after-school tutorial program that she's involved with. Enjoys volunteering at the Boys and Girls Club in the play area. And the thing she wants to do when she grows up is she wants to be a lawyer or a nurse. And I said, we need lots of nurses, so I'll encourage her to continue to study, because as I get old, I'm going to need more nurses to take care of me. Today was a proof example of I'm getting older. Welcome. Our second honorary page is Fanny Ramirez. She's also an eighth grader at Leslie Middle School, and she is involved in the Power Program as well at Leslie and loves arts and crafts at the Boys and Girls Club. And when she grows up, she wants to be a photographer. And maybe you could come to the Capitol and take pictures of us all when you do that. Welcome.
Further courtesies, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I invite you to extend courtesies of the House to my honorary page today, Marae Foster. She's a sixth grader at the Oregon Connections Academy. She enjoys volleyball, singing in the St. Matthew's Choir, and participating in the Franciscan Girls Club. She aspires to be a detective, so I advise us to be on our best behavior today. I'd also like to introduce her mother, Paula Foster, and her brother and sister who are up there in the upper gallery. Welcome to your Oregon house.
Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, colleagues. Hot off the press, just hand it to me here. There's an intern that will be, or excuse me, an honorary page that will be coming to my office. Noah Hill, there you are, age 12 from Independence. He attends Talmadge Middle School. He's in sixth grade. He's interested in swimming and politics. There's a lot of getting in over your head in this place, so that probably combines well. And he wants to either work in the military or Congress. So give him a big hello.
Thank you, all honorary pages today. Hope you enjoy your stay at the Capitol, and we appreciate your work and support. Further courtesies, Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, as most of you know, today is City Hall Day in the Capitol. And I'm joined up on the top left by the Estacada City Council and Mayor. It's Councilors Brent, Sean, Norm, and Mayor Becky Arnold. It is a privilege to serve the people of Estacada with you. Colleagues, please welcome them. Also up, we're joined by our star city manager, Randy Ely, who is so much of a star that the good people of Beaverton have poached him, and he's soon to become deputy mayor. But, Randy, thank you for your service to Estacada. Welcome.
Further courtesies, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a high school principal, one of the most important things that we did at times was to invite guests from other countries to be a part of our school. And at the same time, they became part of a family, and I want to acknowledge above us in the gallery, and they can stand up if you would like. We have a foreign exchange student who's visiting from Lake Annecy, France. Please welcome, I'll just say Alex Perrier, and his hosts, Darren and Erica Hendren. And also, we could actually have Kelly Whiting stand up, because she is also part of that group that gets to enjoy these people. So, again, Alex is sponsored through Andio International Homestays and Sprague High School. This is his first time in the United States. Please welcome to the House of Representatives, and thank you for being here. I hope you have a great day around the Capitol.
Welcome to your Capitol. Further courtesies, Representative Kanemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like courtesies extended to Teresa Lucas, who is seated at my desk. She has been serving as an intern and is in my office, been doing some great work, and is a senior at Western Oregon. And also on the North Isle is Chelsea Thompson. Chelsea is a senior at City Christian High School, lives in the Oregon City area, plans to be involved in the military for a few years, and then hopes to transition into political office. Please extend courtesies. Thank you.
Further courtesies, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, help me extend courtesies to a group of eighth graders in my district, together with their parents and their teacher, Jim Kider. They come from Selwood Middle School, and their teacher has forewarned me that they are a pretty spicy crew. So when you see them around the building, please give the spicy crew a warm welcome. I'm asking them to stand up and wave so that we can wave back.
Welcome to your Capitol. We can use a little spice in here. Further courtesies, Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm hoping you will extend courtesies to a couple of my guests today, Deborah Gerritsen and Candy Hines. Deborah is a stay-at-home mom of five children. She lives in Milwaukee. Deborah is a board member for the Clackamas County Children's Commission. She's also a former Head Start Policy Council chairperson. And Randy Kynes has lived in Hillsborough for the past 17 years. She's a Washington County PCP and works with the Faith Community Outreach Program and volunteers with many other great organizations. These women are both truly amazing. Colleagues, please extend your courtesies. Thank you.
Welcome to your Capitol. Further courtesies? Seeing none, the clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum. Representative Roblin, are you present? Representative Roblin present? Or just excused business? And Representative Jensen is excused. All the quorum is present. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that it is approved and signed the following bills: House Bill 2045, 2065, 2170, 2195, 2197, 2250, and 2251.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform you that the Senate has passed Senate Bills 108, 200, 479, 538, 639, 660, 780, House Bills 2256, 2257, 2258, 2259. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president to inform you that he has signed House Bills 2495 and HJM 2 and 4.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. Committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3468 related to student teachers and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3469 related to personal income taxation. House Bill 3470 related to veterans and prescribing an effective date.
Bills read and for the first time passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 2211 related to soil enhancing products. Revises language in statutes regulating manufacture, distribution, and registration of fertilizers, agriculture amendment, agriculture mineral, and lime products.
Questions now arise on the third reading and final passage of House Bill 2211A. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2211, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2040, relating to roadside assistance.
Questions now arise upon third and final passage of House Bill 2040B. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In 2003, we passed a bill that was called the Move Over Bill for state police and emergency vehicles, ambulances. If you're in a four-lane road, you have to move over to the center lane if you have room. 2040 extends that to roadside assistance vehicles and tow trucks. And it further states that if you cannot move over, you must reduce your speed to 5 miles an hour below the speed limit. This bill came out of Transportation Committee on a unanimous vote, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Klim, how do you vote?
Aye.
Klim votes aye. House Bill 2040B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2082, relating to conservation districts.
Questions now arise upon third and final reading. In passage of House Bill 2082, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2082 passed out of the Ag and Natural Resource Committee by unanimous vote. This measure updates and clarifies soil and water conservation district authorizing statutes to reflect current practices and the contemporary conditions and concerns. It eliminates the requirement for public election if there is no contest. The bill updates and clarifies the relationship between soil and water conservation districts and the Oregon Department of Agriculture to reflect a partnership. The provisions of the technical assistance and the oversight for important and historical appropriate issues. The bill has 36 sections. The bill as a whole could be characterized as being a technical fix and an update bill. A couple substantive changes occur in House Bill 2082. Section 5 adds electors to ensure that public has a right to participate. Section 8 and 9 relates to the district formation and dissolutions. Section 14 creates a simple process for a landowner to request their land to be included into an existing district. Section 15 creates a simple process for a landowner to request withdrawal of land from the existing district. Section 30 changes public notice requirements of the district's annual meeting. The bill was supported by the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts and Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and there was no written material, and no one testified against the bill. Request your A vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2082, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2182, relating to small-scale local energy projects.
Question now arises upon third and final passage of House Bill 2182. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2182 is brought to you by the Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development. It is an update to the statute for the small-scale energy loan program run by the Department of Energy that redefines and broadens the definition of what qualifies as an alternative fuel project. Previously, the statute primarily limited an alternative fuel project to a fleet of vehicles. This broadens the statute to do a couple of things. First, it applies to not only a fleet of vehicles, but also to equipment as well that might use alternative fuels in combustion. It also applies to equipment that is used to produce alternative fuels, and it changes some of the specific language on ethanol to a more general reference to biofuels. Finally, this bill also increases the term of length from 2 years to 4 years for members of the small scale energy loan program board. So this bill is essentially an update of the statute that will allow for additional kinds of equipment and production facilities to be included under a program that already exists and is already providing loans to purchasers of alternative fuel fleets.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
I just wanted to explain why I voted no in committee. It's not anything I have huge heartburn over, because I think the goals in this bill are laudable. I also believe that many of the entities that apply for these loans would, if this program didn't exist, would decide to go ahead with these projects anyway. They would either pursue private financing.
Representative Thatcher, could we just have a little more quiet on the floor? Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Well, I was just saying that I think many of the entities that apply for these loans, if this program didn't exist, would go ahead and decide to pursue these projects either with private financing or going ahead and paying out of pocket because they believe it is the right thing for them to do. So putting it, contrasting it with some of the issues we're facing in our budget, I believe that putting more additional, putting additional taxpayer dollars at risk and expanding this program is not a good decision. So that's my explanation. Thanks.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I believe this bill is intended to update an existing program rather than create a new program. So the existing program that functions will continue to function as it always has. There will just be a few additional items that will be that will qualify under the list of alternative fuel projects. Thank you.
Those are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes. Call is off the floor. Representative Smith, Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Garrett votes aye. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes aye. House Bill 2182A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2188, relating to mortgage transactions.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2188A. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is such a good bill that after you hear it, you're going to wonder why it was not a unanimous passed out of the committee, but it wasn't. it does three things. In the past year, the federal government has declared that there were several kinds of mortgage loans that were risky and therefore needed some more oversight. And it passed a bill to provide that oversight. It left out, however, a loan type, which we in Oregon think is a bit risky, and that's a reverse amortization loans. This bill would put exactly the same regulations in place for reverse amortization loans as for the other risky loans. It also does two other things in this bill. One is if a loan provider who's providing a reverse amortization loan does their advertising and their negotiations in a foreign language, they're required to also provide some of the paperwork in that same language. This simply makes sense if they've decided to do that for whatever reasons they decide, then they need to follow through. DCBS has agreed to provide translations, and it's only three pieces of paper: the good faith estimate and the settlement statement. Two forms: a good faith estimate and the settlement statement. And these provide borrowers with the terms and summary of the loan that they're doing. There is the other piece that is in the foreign language is a thing that says the loan paper, the rest of the loan papers are going to be in English, and we recommend that you get a translator. So DCBS will provide translations for the three most common languages, and those are Spanish, Russian, and Vietnamese. The third thing that this bill does is it protects borrowers who have been defrauded by giving them to the right to bring lawsuit. And under the current mortgage law, they have to pay their lender's attorney's fees if they lose, even if the borrower with the strongest case may be afraid to come to the to this conclusion and bring a lawsuit because of the risk of having to pay, even if they have a great lawsuit. To defer unjustified lawsuits, a borrower remains liable for the lender's attorney fees if the lawsuit is brought in bad faith or for the purpose of harassment. Colleagues, that's what this bill does, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, as you can see, this was a split vote. The main reason I had issues with this bill is it singles out Oregon mortgage companies, Oregon-based mortgage companies. Right now, when they walk into the mortgage company, they're going to sit down and go through the whole process of receiving this loan, and then the paperwork is sent off to Washington Mutual or whichever bank that they're using. Their underwriter says, yes, this person qualifies for this loan. It comes back. Now the person doing that loan has to second-guess what the underwriter says. Does this person really have the ability to repay or not? So we've just taken the burden off the underwriter and the bank to the mortgage lender who is doing the loan, and he has to make that determination. If he decides to give the person the loan after that, and the person takes it and decides to default on it or walk away from it, now the mortgage lender is open for lawsuit, not the underwriter who approved the loan. Now that person can walk out of that bank if the mortgage lender decides not to give him the loan, walk right across the street to the bank, get the very same loan where he's already been approved by an underwriter, and the bank is liable for nothing. Can you tell me how this makes sense? This is, to me, another attack on Oregon-based businesses. It only applies to Oregon-based mortgage companies. You can be a mortgage company from another state and do the loan and not be subject to these lawsuits. So I think this is something everybody needs to look at closely and thoroughly when they're making their decision to vote on this. I thank you, and I would appreciate a no vote on this bill.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues,
bill.
To the bill. Nothing epitomizes the American dream of financial and family security like home ownership. Home ownership creates security for family and provides a sense of community among neighbors. Home equity represents the single largest investment for middle-class families. This dream has been taken from countless Oregon families who are now in foreclosure or those who had hoped someday to own a home. Foreclosures have a huge impact on the homeowners and their families, but there is a much broader impact. The negative economic and social effects of home foreclosures extend across neighborhoods and across the wider community. It's now understood that the problems in the mortgage market are not limited to subprime loans. Lenders, realizing that home prices had foreclosed and had skyrocketed, dipped into their toolboxes and came up with even more risky loan products, one of the most dangerous being negative amortization loans. With these loans, the borrower's initial monthly payments aren't enough to pay even the interest on the mortgage. The principal amount owed grows larger, and eventually the borrower has to refinance or the payments will go up substantially. Even though these loans are very complex and high risk and suitable for very few people, some Oregon-licensed mortgage lenders marketed them to people the lenders knew had no business borrowing the money, even to the most vulnerable Oregonians and seniors. These lenders knew that the borrowers did not have the means to repay, but they sold them these products anyway. During the peak years of the housing boom, Oregon ranked above average for the number of negative amortization loans. These loans products played a major role in today's mortgage crisis. This underscores the importance of extending basic consumer protections to these products. Colleagues, this must not happen again. House Bill 2188 provides those protections. This bill applies federal guidelines to our state to ensure sound underwriting of subprime loans to more risky loan product, negative amortization loans. This bill will require evaluation of the borrower's ability to pay and will limit prepayment penalties for negative amortization loans. It requires that the loan originator advertises in a language other than English, they must make key loan disclosures in that language as well. This bill protects borrowers who bring good faith lawsuits against lenders. If these safeguards had been in place prior to the mortgage crisis, the number of negative amortization loans sold would have been greatly reduced. Much of this crisis, brought on by the questionable and perhaps fraudulent actions of lenders, could have been averted. I encourage your aye vote on House Bill 2188. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Good carrier, how many of these loans, these negative amortization loans, have been sold in Oregon this year?
This year? We don't know the answer to that. What we're told by the lenders is that they're no longer selling these loans at the current time. I can't tell you how many have been sold in Oregon this year, but currently they were told they're not being sold at all. These provisions would apply when the economy turns around and they start to sell these again.
Thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. And colleagues, we're closing the door long after the cow has left with this bill. And these are, trust me, bad loans. People should not engage in these kinds of loans. There is no question. And unfortunately, my objection to this bill is that it only applies to the mortgage brokers and not all lenders. We should be, as a state, even-handed in how we apply these kinds of restrictions. I think this is punishing everybody for some bad practices, a few, which is fine, but right now nobody's selling these loans, and I believe this particular bill singles out a certain industry that is inappropriate for us, and I therefore cannot support it. But in doing so, let me tell you that I do not approve of these loans. No one should sell or take these kinds of loans. They are just plain bad financial decisions. A lot of people have made some really bad financial decisions running up to this. And we are all suffering the consequences of this, but I don't like the uneven playing field of this particular bill and can't support it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is such an interesting bill that it reminds me of some bills that we passed prior sessions. We in this building have had people that were bad actors, so we immediately jumped in and passed some ethics reform. Wow, we know how successful that was. What are we trying to do here? We trying to take a certain segment of the business community and hurt them? I'm going to ask each and every one of you, if you loan me $500, could each and every one of you tell me that I'll be working in 3 months? Probably not. That's what this is about. These loans have virtually dried up. They are a good tool, though, during high inflation. Example, the Carter years, when we had double-digit inflation per year, they were a good loan. Now they are not. The real culprits
in my opinion, that pushed these was Countrywide and WAMU. Yet, we're not touching Countrywide and WAMU on this bill. I don't understand it. I don't understand why we automatically take a broad brush approach, segregate a certain segment that we can, in fact, regulate or discipline, and let the bad actors go. I just don't understand what we're trying to achieve here, folks. And I'll tell you, this is part of my business, and I do support a no vote on a bad bill.
Further discussion, Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
To the bill. Two things. First, thank you to the carriers and proponents of this bill for bringing it forward. My district has the third most subprime mortgages of any district in the state. The disruption to families poorer than my own, who had lives very different from mine, has been astounding. And if I didn't live where I live, I might not know how astounding that impact has been. And the second thing I want to say in response to my friend, Representative Esquivel, is that I think you are right. We are not doing everything, and we don't have jurisdiction over everyone. Specifically and importantly, we don't have jurisdiction over WAMU or Countrywide. So I want to say, let us not have our limitations be our ultimate limitation, and I appreciate the carriers for bringing forward the bill.
Is there further discussion? Representative Holveen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a couple of
To the bill.
Just a couple of comments about this bill. I believe this bill is an extremely important bill and an extremely necessary bill. To the issue of it being aimed at one particular industry and being unfair to that industry, you know, quite frankly, the mortgage loan originators, the mortgage brokers, mortgage bankers are the ones that originate these loans for WAMU and for Countrywide, for the other federally chartered institutions that ultimately end up underwriting these loans. And we didn't see in committee any effort from industry to bring in credit unions or state charter banks under this bill. Quite frankly, they haven't been making these loans. And I would like to correct, we did have a mortgage broker in committee who said that he was making these sorts of loans. So, you know, the issue about these loans being unfair to these folks and being a great burden, we're not prohibiting these loans. All we're doing is requiring the mortgage loan originators or mortgage brokers who already have to go through these suitability standards for making loans on other high-risk loans through federal requirements, they already have to do that. And this is just adding one more loan product that they have to look at in what they're already required to do. So this whole issue of this being unfair, I think, is not really to the point. The point is these are high-risk loans that we need some better scrutiny over, and Oregon should step up and protect what they can protect and not sit back and say, well, you know, we don't have jurisdiction over federally chartered institutions. Well, we'll never have that jurisdiction. That'll always be unlevel. But for us to sit and wait for federal government to regulate what we can regulate to protect Oregon consumers, I think, is a mistake. I just wanted to make those points, and these are negative amortization loans. Again, we're not prohibiting them. Mortgage loan originators and brokers already have to do this suitability standard for other high-risk loans, so it's nothing new to them. Thank you very much.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker, briefly. The good representative from the Emerald Empire has covered a lot of the things that I wanted to say, but I did want to thank the representative from West Salem for her observation that, these are loans that people shouldn't be making, and in that instance, I believe they need to be protected from the possibility of being steered into these bad loans. Even if they're not being made today, there is certainly the possibility, and I've been corrected by the chair, that there was some testimony that these are being made. The department said they had information, didn't have information in that way, but even if they aren't, they can be, and they shouldn't be. They should be looked at very skeptically. All things should be disclosed, and all regulations should be very tightly controlled to make sure that these are only given if appropriate. Thank you very much.
Those are the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barnhart, how do you vote? Barnhart votes aye. House Bill 2188A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2268, relating to requirements for customer authorization of motor vehicle repairs.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2268A. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill we're bringing before you today, 2268A, requires vehicle repair shops to notify you if they're going to do work in excess of $200. This bill addresses all motor repair shops. So when you take your car in for an oil change and a coolant flush, and you're expecting it to be $110, and you show up and you find out they put in a new alternator and power steering pump, and all of a sudden your bill's $600. This requires them to call you before they put in the alternator and the power steering pump and hold your car until you pay them the $600. So this is a very good bill. It passed unanimous. It makes sense. It makes good business sense for auto repair shops to already be doing this best practices measure. But this is something we're putting in just to protect people from having work done on their cars that would be over $200 when they're expecting it to be $60. So I would urge everybody's support and an aye vote on this. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Widener, do you wish to close? Representative Widener does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote? Gilliam votes aye. House Bill 2268A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2433, relating to health insurance and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2433A. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we bring you another bill from the Consumer Protection, House Bill 2433, which also passed with a unanimous vote. This bill will allow Oregonians who work for small employers and who have lost their jobs to get full benefit of the new federal program to subsidize health insurance premiums. Currently, when workers lose their jobs, they have the right to stay on their employer's health plan. For employers with 20 or more employees, This right is provided by the Federal Consolidated Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act, also known as COBRA. For smaller employers, Oregon's state continuation law provides similar rights. In both cases, the former employees normally must pay the full cost of the insurance. And premiums can be extremely expensive, particularly for someone who has just lost their job. The federal economic stimulus package, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, will pay up to 85% of premiums for workers who choose to continue group insurance under either under COBRA or the state continuation. For example, a family that may typically have to pay up to $1,200 a month to continue an employer plan would have to pay only $420 a month with this great subsidy. This federal subsidy is available to former employees for 9 months after they lose their job, but currently Oregonians who worked for small employers can only continue coverage through the state continuation plan for 6 months. House Bill 2433 will change Oregon law to allow Oregonians to take full advantage of these health care subsidies in particular. It extends the length of time former employees can continue coverage through the state continuation program from 6 to 9 months, giving Oregonians the opportunity to receive the subsidy for the maximum time available. For Oregonians who lost their job before the federal stimulus package was enacted and chose not to continue their employer plans at that time, they are given a second chance to continue coverage to take advantage of this subsidy. Insurers will be required to notify all employer groups and individuals whose jobs ended since September 1st, 2008, of the possibility that they qualify for the subsidy. Consumers then have 31 days from the date they were notified to decide to continue their group coverage. College House Bill 2433 provides important health care benefits to Oregonians who need it most at no cost to the state. During these troubled economic and budgetary conditions, the opportunity to take advantage of the federal funds to assist unemployed Oregonians is one that we cannot afford to miss. Please vote aye.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Tomei, do you wish to close?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Thank you. Speaker votes aye. House Bill 2433A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in consideration of HCR 6. Be made a special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Monday, April 16th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 108 relating to practice of veterinary medicine. Senate Bill 200 relating to homelessness. Senate Bill 479 relating to opportunities for disabled veterans and public contracting. Declared an emergency. Senate Bill 538 relating to physicians. Physical education declared an emergency. Senate Bill 639 related to Oregon Wheat Commission. Senate Bill 660 related to Oregon State Capital Foundation appropriated money. Senate Bill 780 related to asset forfeiture oversight of visitor committee.
Bills read for the first time were passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 328 relating to unlawful collection practices.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 328. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 328, to quote a senator from this chamber, or who served in this chamber last session, is a short, simple, and significant bill. And it really is a very short, simple, and significant bill. Senate Bill 328 adds a sentence to the Unfair Trade Practices Act. It makes a violation of the unlawful debt practices a violation of the Unfair Trade Practices Act. This bill is extremely important in these economic times when we have people that are getting into financial trouble and having trouble making their payments and paying their bills. This bill doesn't say that they shouldn't pay their bills, but what it does say is that debt collectors and people collecting debt really need to have some ethics about how they do that and what kind of practices they can use to do that. And currently, consumers, when they are subjected to unlawful trade practice or unlawful debt collection practices, they really don't have a lot of recourse. They have to, the only recourse they could probably have is by hiring an attorney and filing a suit and going after a debt collector. And generally, somebody in this situation really doesn't have the financial ability to hire an attorney to do that. This bill is extremely important in these times. Really a simple bill. It also would enable our Attorney General under the Unfair Trade Practices Act to cooperate and enjoin with attorney generals from other states to file suits and to bring regulation down and file the appropriate court cases on out-of-state collection agencies. This bill really brings a little bit of power to our Attorney General to cooperate with what has been a problem in the state of Oregon with out-of-state debt collectors. This bill also will help in protecting consumers from another group that has surfaced, which are debt buyers who are first-party debt collectors. Collection agencies are third-party, and so the first-party debt collectors would also fall under this provision of law. This is an extremely important bill, and I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holvey, do you wish to close?
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. No.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Senate Bill 328, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Matthews, for what reason are you in the queue?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request unanimous consent to return to the order of business of courtesies, please.
Representative Matthews requests unanimous consent to return to order the order of courtesies. Is there objection? So ordered. Representative Matthews.
Colleagues, if you will please allow me, I'd like to direct your attention to my left and in the upper gallery. As you heard earlier from Representative from my neighboring district, today is a day we're celebrating our folks that are serving within our communities as city councilors. I have three of very good friends of mine, but I want to mention These are folks that dedicate a great deal of their lives and volunteer their time. These are three of my friends that do a great service to the citizens of Gresham. It's a pleasure to serve those citizens with you. This is Councillor Dick Strathern, Councillor Shirley Craddock, and our Council President, Paul Warking. Please extend your courtesies. Thank you.
While we're in courtesies, any other courtesies? Last call. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Announcement from the Speaker. Effective immediately, I am making the following appointment to the Commission on Autism Spectrum Disorder. Representative Chris Edwards. Further announcements. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the House Education Committee meeting for this afternoon has been canceled. Enjoy your afternoon.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today at 2:45 on the fourth floor in the little conference room, there will be a cake in celebration of somebody's birthday. And I have to say, this year it's coming from Fred Meyer, my usual baker. My wife is probably on California 86 South, turning right at the Salton Sea, heading for Borrego Springs for the next month. And here I am.
And we are glad you are right where you are. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Democrats, we are caucusing at 11:45 in the caucus room. Bring your lunch.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will caucus immediately following adjournment. Thank you.
Birthday boy number two, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I couldn't pass the opportunity to, in honor of my birthday, I'd like to invite everybody to Representative Barker's office at 2:30 for birthday cake.
Any further announcements? Remonstrances. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'll use this opportunity to tell Representative Primaloa that if I'd known that, I would have baked him a cake. I'll bring one next week. Colleagues, just wanted to let you know today is the first day of April, and besides being April Fool's Day and Representative Cameron's birthday and Representative Barker's birthday, it is the beginning of Child Abuse Prevention Month in Oregon and around the country. Tomorrow there'll be a rally. There'll be things going on all week. If you get a chance, go downtown past the courthouse where you'll see over 5,000 blue ribbons tied onto the big tree there outside. Those represent, each ribbon represents two deaths by child abuse, and unfortunately they can't do 10,000 ribbons because that would be too depressing. So if you just think of that when you go by there and think of all the things you can do to help make your community safer for children, and you'll be hearing from me more often this next month.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I may or may not, I'm not sure, but I may have to apologize to some people on this floor. When I meant on the term a bad actor, I was not talking about my colleague from Ashland or the Oregon Christmas Tree District. Thank you.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, colleagues. I rise in a state of disappointment, rather some a little bit of confusion about the events of the past 13 hours leading up to the cancellation of this afternoon's House Education Committee. The committee was scheduled to meet in joint session with the Senate Education Committee to hold an information session and then public hearings on several bills dealing with charter schools and virtual schools. Now, I understand there's been some confusion about whether public testimony would be allowed at today's meeting as it was originally scheduled. And even now, with the remaining Senate Education Committee as it is now scheduled, whether public testimony would be allowed. In fact, the schedule for today still says no public testimony on it for the Senate hearing. And as many of you know, the whole charter school and virtual school issue is a big deal for thousands of students and parents all over the state. And the bills originally on the list for the joint hearing included both those in support of these schools and those that would maybe put some of these schools at a disadvantage. Canceling the House committee participation in this joint committee leaves us with a shorter list of bills. That bill list only includes those that would put those schools at a disadvantage. So we're left with now an unbalanced presentation. But what's worse is that there are families that are impacted by these bills that have traveled from all over the state or are in process of traveling from all over the state to hopefully have their voice heard and testify, and we don't know if their voices will be heard. What's even more frustrating is the process. I have in my hand an email from 10:16 this morning officially canceling the meeting, less than 3 hours before the meeting's supposed to start. And I understand there may be some really good reasons to cancel the House Education meeting, but we do need to keep in mind that we're affecting more than people than just in this building. There are people that have traveled a good ways to come and testify, and I feel bad for them, and I hope that they will still be allowed to have their voices heard, and I'm hopeful that we keep our constituents in mind when we make these moves. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I wanted to take this opportunity to talk to you a little bit about the events of the last 13 hours, really the last 24 hours. As you all know, we have many, many families across the state that are rightly concerned about making sure that they are able to make the best possible choices for their children's education. There are many bills that are sitting before the legislature, and there has been an ongoing discussion about where this discussion would start. Would it start in the Senate or would it start in the House? Originally, there was the idea that it would be a good idea to have the two committees come together, open up all of the bills, have all of the bills open for public testimony, and have the House and Senate policy committees both have the chance to hear from advocates and detractors of all of these bills at the same time. Unfortunately, that is not the way that the agendas came out, and it did not seem appropriate to continue where for half of the hearing there could be public testimony, and for the other part of the meeting there would not be the ability to have public testimony. The meeting, while the official meeting cancellation did go out this morning, those of you who are serving on the House Education Committee received, and I do know that I got some confirmation back late last night, a notification that this meeting would be canceled. In addition, proponents efforts were made to contact proponents of the measures that had families traveling. This, of course, does cause an inconvenience, but there was very limited time available for testimony on these bills. The understanding at this point is that if there is any legislation related to virtual schools in this legislative session, that work would begin on the Senate, and the House will take up that work when it comes to this side. The House bills that were scheduled for today are not scheduled for rehearing at any point in the near future that I'm currently aware of. I know that there has been some concern that if they were rescheduled, they would be scheduled for April 10th, and I just want to confirm for all of you that if they are rescheduled, they will not be rescheduled on April 10th. I apologize to anyone for whom this has caused inconvenience, most especially to families. When we take this issue up in the House Education Committee, we will have robust and open public testimony and hope that all who are interested will come and participate. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Given our passage of the new modified form of fusion voting, I rise to announce the formation of a new political party, the Stand Behind the Animals Party. Party co-chair Representative Barton has done extensive research. One of the advocates for Priority Bill admonished us not to view the websites, but he had the foresight to ask which websites in particular we should not review. So I want to say thank you, Stand Behind the Animals,
you don't know what I'm talking about, you can look at Willamette Week's website front page. And happy April 1st.
So, Representative Smith, that would be stand the animals behind the stab party. Is that what you're saying? Further remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Tomei.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Thursday, April 2nd, 2009.
Representative Tomei moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Thursday, April 2nd, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.